This is Madan. I'm a program manager in Azure, specifically Azure Compute, focusing on infrastructure as a service. My team is responsible for the infrastructure as a service in Azure, and I'm excited to be here. My first time in Pune. So I grew up in India. I went to the United States for my graduate education and then started working for Microsoft. So excited to be here, and thanks for being. All right, so agenda. You know, I wanted to kind of keep it short. I know we are running, a shrunk agenda today, and I'll try to wrap it in 45 minutes. But the goal really is to start with the Azure application patterns. What do we see in infrastructure as a service today? What is in it for you? Some best practices. And I'll specifically deep dive on the high performance solutions on Azure using premium storage, which I believe is something most of you are interested in. And last but not the least, I'll talk about some of the partner offerings that we have, not just the first-party offerings, and ways to get started. You know, if you have all this information and you find it useful, how can you get started? All right. So the first thing I wanted to kind of settle on is, what do we really care about, right? We care about applications, right? We all are developers at heart. We are writing applications. We are deploying them. Public cloud, as Dave mentioned, is really useful in deploying large-scale applications. So at the heart of it, we love applications. And applications, I say, are like children. How many of you have children? All right. So you know the drill here. So they're born. You go through their life cycle. You develop them. You test them. And you also do what's necessary to manage them. You spoil them sometimes. Applications are the same way. Sometimes you're over-provisioning them. You have four or five administrators taking care of them. Sometimes you even neglect them, right? I use this analogy to kind of impart on the fact that it's all around applications. If you can make applications run great, just like children, you attain peace, if you will. So what do we want applications to be, right? If you think about the three things that you really want your applications and how public cloud can help. It's really about making it more cheaper and cheaper, right? To manage them, to develop them, to deploy them, right? So time to market, cost to market, whatever that means for you, right? It would be the number of developers, the number of time, months you have to kind of deploy the solution, all of that. You want it to be faster, right? There is never a time or never an IT manager who says like, I'm okay with your applications running slower. You want it to be faster and faster, every day, every month, every year. And you want it to be smarter. You don't want your applications to kind of sit there, decay, and be static, right? New requirements come in day after day after day, so you want to make sure that your applications can learn, your applications can get better, right? So at the core of it, I think what I wanted to talk about today is how can you make applications cheaper, faster, and smarter using Azure? So before I do that, I wanted to kind of talk about the top application patterns that customers today use Azure and Azure Infrastructure as a Service for, right? Development and test, very easy. Right? If you think about, you're creating new environments for your developers to deploy, test their, bits as they're working on. Azure is a fantastic background for that, right? Because you don't have to go invest in new hardware. You don't have to have your IT department go procure, go through a six-month process. At literally, a few clicks, you're able to kind of create, hundreds of virtual machines, deploy the software you want, and do the testing all within the premises of the security and the compliance that your IT enterprises want. Once you do that and you can say like, this makes sense, I'm getting a lot of benefits, I don't have to worry about managing hardware, I can focus on my application and, development and testing them. Then you think about lifting and shifting existing applications. You develop, I get it. Now I actually want to run production software, right? So you have existing applications running in your data center or maybe under your desk, wherever it may be. You want to use Azure as the target for deploying these applications. So this is, think of it as the next point in the journey. It's a bit more of a serious commitment because you're running a production app. It could be mission critical for you. And I want to tell you that Azure has all you need to kind of run a mission critical application. And if you think about the third step, you say like, okay, I've got the dev test, I've got the lifting and shifting, what can I do more? And this is where you are actually starting to use the unique cloud value that Dave talked about, right? Starting to use an imagination. What if you can use cloud as your disaster recovery target, right? You've always taken backups for your applications, right? Database applications, web applications. What if you put your backups to be automatically managed in Azure? So you don't have to worry about the hardware, the upkeep, the maintenance, the personnel to keep that fresh. You can also do, you know, active failover mechanisms. Your entire applications, including your identity, 3-tier, N-tier, whatever it may be, you can have, you know, the entire replica set up in one of the Azure regions. And if something were to happen to your on-premises data center, things automatically fail over, right? A lot of excitement around customers in doing something like that. And then the last one is the ultimate, right? When you think about the span of, hey, what can I do today and where do I want to go? A lot of what Dave talked about in the keynote is what you can do differently, what you can do better that can make you successful, right? Make our customers successful. And this is where you are taking advantage of the cloud fundamentally. So you're writing applications that are designed for scale, really large scale, right? Azure is in 19 regions today, and we'll be expanding to more regions. What if you can write an application, just like the social media applications you have today, whether it's Facebook or Netflix, you can afford to do that as well as a developer, you know, because, you know, we make it so easy for you to kind of, you know, write applications that are built with such massive scale in mind. All right, so these are the top application patterns, and I'll talk about throughout the rest of the talk in terms of, you know, how this different features in Azure Infrastructure as a Service helps you with the different patterns. So when we talk about the application patterns, just a real quick step back on, you know, there are broadly two types of applications. One is the application what we call as lift and shift. They are designed for on-premises. They are typically single process scale-up, and by that I mean you have one machine or at minimum like tens of machines, but the actual mission-critical software is running within that virtual machine, either Windows or Linux, and it's using all the resources in that virtual machine, CPU, memory, network, and disks, right? So it's designed for a constrained resource environment. Your on-premises data center, a bunch of servers, and you can imagine like a SQL server on Oracle or a DB2 database application that is running and or running on a really big bare metal server or on a virtual machine, right? And typically the requirements are transactional. You know, most of you know about asset properties, right? Atomicity, consistency, isolation, and durability. You know, when you commit to a particular transaction, you want to make sure that, you know, it is fully committed. You know, if you're running a banking operation or if you're running a transactional system like a railway reservation, you can't have data durability issues or, you know, integrity issues, right? So atomicity is important. And like I said, people do scale these applications, but they're limited, right? You know, maximum you have like 10 servers, 20 servers, right? And then there is a new set of applications, which is what Dave was inviting you to imagine, the cloud-born applications, and we have several examples already today, you know, that are truly natively born in cloud. Bing.com is our own example, where it is designed fundamentally for elasticity. It's designed fundamentally thinking that failure will happen, right? So the application itself has the smarts to figure out if a group of machines that it is running on fails, you know, it can automatically fail over. It can automatically scale in and scale out as the demand increases, if you will. And it's typically run on a bunch of virtual machines or a bunch of machines that are treated as if it's commodity, right? So typically it's running on hundreds, if not thousands of machines and treating them as commodity, compute, networking, storage. The data is stored there, but they're not persistent. The application itself is smart enough to say, I know these, you know, five machines will fail at in some point in time, and I'll take care of the data that I need to copy over, right? So these are the smarter cloud-born applications. They tend to be eventually consistent. You know, if you're using Hadoop or any other NoSQL offerings, they are built fundamentally on this model where, you know, capacity and availability are more important than consistency. So you may not have the asset properties, but for with eventual consistency, you can achieve, really large-scale available, transactional systems. And like I said, it's massive scale. I literally think massive in terms of it can span multiple regions across the world, run across thousands and thousands of CPU cores. And the primary point here is it's built for elasticity. Say, if, for example, you wrote a software, you put it in a Windows Phone store or an iPhone store, and your app takes off, and you suddenly have 100,000 users. You need to be able to kind of bet on a platform that can serve that kind of demand. Because the worst thing that can happen is when your application is successful, that you don't have the infrastructure to support it, right? So that's a core focus for Azure. All right, so Azure and applications. I'll go through each of our features in this framing. So I first said applications care about running cheaper, and cheaper in terms of cost, cheaper in terms of time, the cost to market and time to market. So how? This is, you know, the classical picture. If you have seen the operational model behind which public cloud or any cloud is built on, there is patterns of usage, right? Tax season comes and you will see, you know, the usage of resources spike up. Festival time, shopping time. you know, there is 10x the normal load that you can see. The power of cloud is where we can actually aggregate, you know, these patterns across different industries, across different verticals. So, you know, you have this sense of infinite capacity and on-demand capacity. When you need 100 servers, you don't have to go through a payroll process or a provisioning process that takes 6 months, right? You get thousands of cores if you need in any particular region of any particular configuration. So that's where I think we are enabling you to kind of cut down the cost to market and the time to market value proposition. So when we reflect on this, on the infrastructure as a service features, it reflects on the virtual machine sizes, right? Today in Azure, we have virtual machines that come in different ways, shape, and form. We have our own naming series, so we have the A family. And you know, it starts from, you know, one core all the way to, you know, 16 cores. They have two types of virtual machines. One is called a basic virtual machine, which is a little bit cheaper, ideal for development and test. You know, you basically, there's a little bit of overcommitment in terms of your compute. And then you have the standard sizes specifically meant for production applications. We don't overcommit any other resources, CPU, memory, or networking there, and it's meant for production applications. We also have virtual machine sizes that have high memory. Our A8 and A9 virtual machines are you know, fit with InfiniBand, you know, high, you know, networking connectivity, and they also have lots of memory. You can attach up to 16 disks, the largest of the virtual machine, each being 1 terabyte. So if you really want to get started, you know, just to get going in terms of dev and test, you know, the application pattern for development test, you can get going today. You can go get a free trial. You get up to $200 per month in terms of credits for any of the Azure services. And roughly it translates to 3 VMs that you can run 24 hours a day for the entire month. Or you can run on, you know, 30 Hadoop nodes for 10 hours. Or you can have 100 websites plus a database, if you will. So you save quite a bit of money. The idea is to kind of make it as easy as possible so you can get started. So I'll definitely encourage you to go check that out. So the next aspect, faster. So we got how Azure makes your applications cheaper. How do you make it faster? And when you think about faster, it again comes to virtual machines. So we have two series of virtual machines called the D-series and the G-series. So D-series is primarily our virtual machine with local SSD you know, space in that virtual machine. So for applications that can take advantage of SSD and manage its own persistence, you know, these are the ideal targets. So any big compute application, any big data, NoSQL application, even relational database applications, SQL Server, Oracle, you know, a lot of these databases today support essentially a tiered storage model where you can have RAM as your memory, and then you have a second level caching that you can use the SSD for. Again, you can have up to 16 disks. You can have a persistent storage as well as kind of the ephemeral SSD-based storage. The G family, like Dave mentioned, is the largest virtual machine in the market today. We have, you know, 32 CPU cores, 448 gigabytes of RAM, 6.5 terabytes of SSD. So this is local SSD, right? So if you can literally run the entire database if you're running a database application on the local SSD drive, as long as you can take care of the persistence. And you know, you can attach up to 64 disks. So 64 terabytes of data in a single virtual machine, right? So, and I'll talk about how premium storage will make this even better. All right, so when we talk about storage, all virtual machines in Azure, they have the architecture where when you care about persistence, so your application is running within a virtual machine, you're writing to the disks, you want it to be persistent. The way we implement that is because all the writes that you're writing into the disk are actually backed by Azure Storage Service. So we actually implement an NTFS volume inside your virtual machine that makes your application believe that it's writing to a local disk. But in reality, in the background, we are actually, you know, piping the writes to the Azure Storage Service, right? And this is essentially the architecture. So you have the system drive, which is where you would install your application. It has its own cache that you can turn on and turn off. You know, you can turn on just for reads, or you can turn on for both reads and writes. And then you have a temporary disk. Let me go back. Which is what I called as the ephemeral disk that you can use for, you know, the SSD space can be used for that. And then you have the persistent data disks, all of which are backed by Azure Blobs, right? So if we go forward, we also have an offering called Azure Files. And think of this as a shared storage offering, which is essentially, think of it as SMB in the cloud, you know, an SMB file share in the cloud. Again, this is backed in Azure, you know, Azure Blobs. So regardless of whether you're using these as a shared storage or a direct attached storage, you know, Azure Files or Azure Data Disks, you know, these are backed by the Azure Blob storage. And again, the cache settings, like I mentioned, if you are running a production application, you know, especially like a database application like SQL or Oracle, make sure that you put your user database files and log files on the data disk, not on the temporary storage. And definitely make sure that you tweak the caching option to what your performance is. So premium storage, I wanted to go ahead and show a couple of demos here. So as Dave mentioned, this is one of the latest features that we have in preview today. It's still in preview. If you want to try this out, you can just go to the portal, request access, and within a few hours, we'll be able to give you access. Like I said, in the initial offering, we will have up to 32 terabytes of storage per VM that you can attach, and this is premium storage. So the way we will differentiate the premium storage from the standard storage is, you have a specific enumeration that you would call out, and I'll show you an example that allows you to explicitly specify how much IOPS and size that you need for your premium data. So you create a premium storage account just like you would create a regular storage account, and then you carve out disks out of that storage account. And like Dave mentioned, you can basically get up to or less than 1 millisecond read latency with this SSD offering. So the premium storage, the backend implementation is all based on SSD hardware, so which is why you're able to get that kind of performance. And so if I were to open up a premium storage virtual machine, which is called the DS series, and I'm looking at the DS14, which is the largest premium storage virtual machine, what you will notice is that there is actually another cache now. So in addition to our OS disk cache, we actually implemented a specific special data disk cache that is meant specifically for premium storage. And what that does is it's actually using the SSD that is available on the virtual machine, on the physical hardware, to kind of give you a even higher performance, especially in terms of your reads. Again, this cache itself can be configured to be turned on, turned off, turned on for reads, or turned on for reads and writes. No difference there, but the key thing is this cache is doing a lot of the magic in terms of giving you a predictable behavior, because as depending on the size of the virtual machines you choose, you could have multiple virtual machines running on the same hardware. So the cache is what is giving you the predictability, right? I often tell it's more important to be predictable and fast as opposed to just fast, right? You're faster sometimes, 5 seconds, and then sometimes 20 seconds is not good enough, right? Most applications require the predictability. So the cache is an important component there. So make sure that when you're configuring these caches, you're paying attention to what settings you have. So let me quickly show you a demo. I'll be sitting now. Hopefully you guys can see me. So what I have here is basically a set of virtual machines. The first thing that I'm going to show is a premium storage. A virtual machine, it's a DS virtual machine. I'll quickly show you what the configuration is. There we go. I have one disk attached to it. You can see here, I have a temporary drive here that I talked about. There's a bunch of premium storage that I've attached with different settings, read cache and no cache. So what I'm going to do is just run the simple test. How many of you know about IOMeter? IOMeter is just a performance test utility for disk performance. So if I run this tool, go back, and I start this test, and I'll run the same test. It's the same configuration across all the different virtual machines that I have. So this is a single virtual machine with a single premium storage data disk attached to it. And I'm basically doing a bunch of writes, simulating a database write, right? Typically 8K writes. You can see I'm getting up to 5,000 IOPS. Now, if I go to another virtual machine, and in this case what I have, if I bring this up, I have 32 terabytes. And what I've done is basically 32 disks that I have attached to the virtual machine and striped them. Right, I basically use Windows striping to kind of make it look like a single volume. Right, so 32 terabytes attached to a single virtual machine, all backed by premium storage. And I run the same test here. Cancel. And you can see, I'm getting upwards of 50,000 IOPS. Right, and you'll see it's pretty consistent. Now let me do a little bit better. So this is kind of the scale. You can start with a regular storage virtual machine. With a standard disk, you get up to 500 IOPS. You get a single disk with premium storage, you get 5,000 IOPS. You get up to 32, and you get 50,000 IOPS. Right? So you know your range. You can pick your, pick your range based on what your application needs are. Now, what I want to show you is a G-series, where I am actually doing the same test, but on the local SSD, right? So I have 606.5 terabytes of local SSD RAM. I can show you quickly. I also have, you know, some standard disks attached to it. So you can see here, you know, it's close to 6 terabytes here, right? The standard storage. So I'm going to just do some writes there. So I'm going to write. Cancel. So you can see it's 135,000 IOPS. So you can see the range that you have. You can start with 500 IOPS, you can run up to 5,000 IOPS, 50,000 IOPS, 130,000 IOPS. So anywhere in this, you should be able to kind of host an application and get the, you know, the performance that you need. All right, so the last portion of the demo, I actually wanted to show you a real application. In this case, SQL. I used to be part of the SQL Server group, so I wanted to kind of show you this. So what I have here is SQL Server 2014 enterprise image running in a virtual machine with premium storage backed. And what I wanted to show you is I have, if I open up the SQL Server Management Studio, and by the way, you know, you could do the same demo or the same application with Oracle or MySQL or any of the database applications that you need. So what you would see here is I have basically the AdventureWorks database that comes with the SQL Server code samples. I've created two versions of the database, one that is backed in premium data disk, one that is backed in standard data disk. And what I'm going to do is run a stress tool, a stress test, and I'll show you in Perfmon, you know, the performance difference. So as you can see here, I've got the premium disks and the standard disks. The database is basically, you know, living in these two variants. And you can see, in terms of the log writes, this is actually running Hackathon, or the in-memory variation that is released in SQL Server 2014. So you can see, in terms of transactions, it's approximately, 3 to 4 times faster running on premium data disks. Same application, I haven't done anything. All I've done is basically put premium storage for my database files and log files instead of standard disks. That's all I had to do. And if you see here, the test also finished in 34 seconds here while this is still running. It roughly takes about 3 to 4 times more. Again, very simple. You know, it's the same primitives that you know about. You should be able to just attach a data disk that is backed by a premium storage account, and you should be good to go. All right, back to slides. One thing that you want to understand when we think about, you know, I mentioned like all our disks are backed by Azure storage. One of the things that's great about Azure, you know, when you compare with the other public cloud providers is out of the cloud, you know, we get high availability. Every single write that you have to from a virtual machine to a data disk is replicated and maintained 3 times, right? So this is something that we do out of the cloud. You don't even have to go configure, right? By default, you get a highly available option. And what that means is you don't have to, like if you are running on-premises and you have an application that's running under your desk or in a data center, you had to worry about the durability of your writes, right? In Azure, you don't have to. Just by moving to Azure, you immediately get a benefit of the availability that we can take care for you. And as I mentioned, you know, you have the various sizes. Typically, the mental math that you want to keep in mind is for every core, regardless of the virtual machine family that you use in Azure, we'll be able to support 2 data disks, right? So if it's a 16-core virtual machine, you should be able to use 32 data disks. If it's a 32-core G-series virtual machine, you can attach up to 64. This is the rough math that you should have in mind. So you can be balanced about, you know, your virtual machine capacity. And this is the animation that shows that, so I'll keep moving. The other thing that you also want to mention is in addition to creating 3 copies of your data locally, we also have the option, and this is an option, right? So this is an option where you can actually keep a copy of it in another region, right? A completely different region, Azure region, for extra protection. So think of it as kind of like your DR, the free DR that comes with it. You know, obviously it's an option, there's a cost associated with it, but if your application cares about it, you know, you should be able to turn this on pretty easily. And one of the things that's great about all of this is, it's as simple as enabling an option. You don't have to go and figure out the mechanics of, this region, and I need to kind of figure out how the blocks of data is moving between regions. In general, all virtual machine artifacts, including the virtual machine images, and the virtual machine images are actually the operating system that that is powering the virtual machine, can be captured. So you can actually say, for example, I'm running a G-series virtual machine with 64 data disks. You have everything set up. And then you decide, look, you know, this is my master copy. I want this master configuration to be replicated 100 times, 1,000 times for my IT department. You should be able to run a simple capture command, capture that configuration, and then redeploy it, you know, thousands of times, you know, from PowerShell, from Portal, or you know, just directly through REST APIs, right? Now, if you're using a particular version of SDK. And we support this both for Windows and Linux. So one of the things, like Azure, Dave talked about, is the Azure footprint, right? So the thing that we've done there is, you know, obviously there is, like, you know, across the world we have, like, you know, 19 plus regions where we have, you know, data centers with actual physical servers running, hosting virtual machines. Remember I told you guys about taking advantage of the cross-region replication? The way we design these data centers is every region has a geo-replication pair by default, right? You know, wherein, say, for example, if you're running on, whenever we have the India data center available later this year, you will actually have, if you're running in Pune, you will have another region within India that will actually be your geo-replicated pair, right? That we would recommend you put your, you know, the passive replicas or the active replicas there. So all the data centers are built in mind. In fact, our own code, you know, that is powering Azure runs that way. So you get the regional isolation, because if a disaster strikes, you know, you get a hurricane, you get a typhoon, it typically impacts a region. So you want to make sure that your applications can survive such a disaster, right? So that's the whole region behind this thinking. All right, so that the last part. So we talked about cheaper, we talked about faster. How do we make it smarter? Right? This is what we all care about, right? At the end of the day, this is the nirvana, right? We want to make our applications faster. We want to you know, empower ourselves so we can do more and more intelligent stuff, create valuable, monetizable IP as enterprises. So what does smarter look like? Smarter looks like applications that are highly available. They're built for high availability. When stuff happens to your virtual machines or the hardware, application is smart enough to figure out and detect and fail over, right? Manage at scale. Remember I talked about massive scale, hundreds, thousands. When you're managing 1, 2, 10, even 20 virtual machines, you know, you can actually apply human power, you know, maybe work around scripts to kind of manage them. But when you're talking about thousands, it's a completely different problem. Any amount of manpower, any amount of scripting is bound to fail, because maybe you have a same script running in 900 virtual machines. The last 100, everything fails. What do? You go back, you know, how do you kind of maintain state? How do you maintain consistency across all your machines? So this is a huge problem that we intend to kind of help, you know, provide you tools so you can solve it for yourself. And then the last aspect is the right ones run anywhere, right? There is so much diversity in cloud, right? There is different public cloud providers. There are so many languages, .NET, Java, Python, PHP. Every week, it seems like a new language, right? So if you're willing to spend money on a cloud provider, you want to make sure that you have a cloud provider that is open, right? And that's where Azure's commitment to being open to all languages, not just Windows and .NET, but Java, Linux, you know, whatever your choice of application framework, whatever your choice of operating system is, you want to make sure that it runs great on Azure. And you're able to achieve this nirvana of, I wrote an application, but that can run in any cloud, public cloud, private cloud, without having to change a whole lot, right? So some of the key concepts that you need in order to kind of build those smarter applications, if you think about high availability, is the notion of availability set. So availability set in Azure is the concept for you to kind of create an application that can span multiple virtual machines. So if a virtual machine goes down, there is another virtual machine that can pick up, you know, the workload in terms of whatever activity that's going on in the one that goes down, right? So it's supported for Windows and Linux. It doesn't really matter what application you're running in a virtual machine. But the core of it is, you know, today, if you go into any of the Azure data centers, you'll see racks and racks of hardware like this, right? You know, each rack typically has anywhere between 20 physical machines to 100 virtual physical machines, right? And each of these physical machines are essentially running virtual machines in them. You know, sometimes up to tens of virtual machines and physical machines. So a single rack essentially can run up to like 400 virtual machines, right? Now, if you pack them. Now, what happens is this entire rack has a single point of failure, which is the power unit, you know, the rack switch, you know, where you basically have the power and you also have the networking interface that can connect to the entire data center back spine, right? So that becomes your single point of failure. So if you are running an application in a virtual machine, and if something were to happen to the power, and things always happen, right? We should never assume that things will run forever, right? Especially in this scale. Things are always failing left and right. So your application would go down, which is not something you want if it's a mission-critical application. So which is why we have this notion of an availability set, wherein when you create an application, you can create in pairs or, more than a pair, 3, 5, 7, whatever you want. And then you create what we call as an availability set. An availability set is essentially slots where your virtual machines can be placed in such a way that, you are isolating the failure. They are not all sharing the same power unit. They are all not sharing the same networking interface, if you will, right? So what that allows you to do is it reduces the probability of all your virtual machines in your availability set going down at the same time. So very simple concept, think of it as what you do today on-premises when you create a disaster recovery site. We've just essentially taken the same model and implemented it within a single Azure region. Now you can have availability sets that can span multiple regions, for DR purposes as well. All right, so in this case, I'm simulating a particular rack go down because maybe the power went bad or the networking switch bad, and then you basically are protected in that case. I also wanted to talk a little bit about some of the networking capabilities that we have to make your applications more highly available, right, and secure. So we have a load balancer as a service that you can use to load balance groups of virtual machines, which hopefully is running in an availability set, so you can actually direct traffic. You can make sure you can detect the health of the virtual machine to direct traffic. You can do round robin type schemes. All the classic enterprise capabilities, right? Reserved IP, so you can actually have fixed IP address lookups for your application, so you don't have to worry about things changing all the time. You can ACL by the subnets, so it's secure, so the right accesses are happening to you. Say for example your database tier. We also support forced tunneling, so it looks exactly like your on-premises. It's not reaching out to internet directly from Azure. Say you're running a SQL Server or an Oracle database, you don't want that virtual machine to be directly reaching out to public cloud because, you could have vulnerability there, right? So, and then we also support multiple virtual NICs. So for applications that require high availability and take advantage of the fact that if a single NIC fails, you have another NIC to kind of float, we support that as well. And we, Dave talked a lot about kind of the hybrid connectivity. So if you're running in your on-premises data center and you want to extend into Azure, we have several options. We have an IPsec-based VPN solution. We also have a partner-based solution called ExpressRoute. It's a partnership with the big telco vendors across the world. You can be certain that when we have the Azure data center in India, we would have partnerships with the big telco vendors in India as well. And what that allows you to do is treat Azure data centers as your backyard, right? It's an extension of your existing data center. Your application doesn't have to deal with the differences in terms of the hardware or the connectivity. You connect your machines to your corpnet, just like you do today, and then you just extend it. Trust and control, obviously, we care about this a lot. Any enterprises or any small and medium businesses, doing, real production workloads, they care about these compliances. And Dave talked about it this morning as well. We have not just our own certifications, but we also have a marketplace of all these different security vendors providing solutions. So within a click of a button, you should be able to kind of select them, compose them into your virtual machine. All right, so we talked about high availability. How do you manage at scale? So we have a technology called VM extension. So you create virtual machines, no different than what you do on-premises. We have a different technology called virtual machine extensions, which are essentially the ability to kind of compose another software to run within the virtual machine. And this software can be anything. It could be antivirus, it could be a configuration management solution, it could be even a simple script that you wrote, right? The goal behind this technology is to be able to allow customers to customize their virtual machine so they can comply to whatever the IT policy that you have, right? So at the core of it, from a technology point of view, all we are doing is essentially there is an agent that is running within every virtual machine in Azure, Windows or Linux, that can do some bootstrapping to kind of run a third-party software. And the third-party software that you would compose in is all curated. So they go through our certification. So Azure actively works with a set of partners. We have about 38 partners today, and we'll be expanding more, who provide a variety of solutions. So Chef, Puppet, Docker, Symantec, Trend, you name it. Most of the marketplace partners have a software solution using extensions. And through APIs or through PowerShell or through CLI or through Portal, you should be able to go look at your virtual machines and just compose it. So I'll quickly show you what this looks like in the portal. So if I go to the portal here, and this is the case, remember I was demoing the virtual machine. This is a SQL virtual machine here. And I go to select that virtual machine. I click extensions. And it looks like I already have one extension installed. But I can add more. And when I say add, I see this menu of different offerings. So if I want to choose, say, Symantec, I should be able to click on that. I get some information on what this virtual machine extension looks like. And I say create. And I'll get a little bit more information on input parameters that I can add. And then that's it. So this one doesn't look like it needs any. So all I would need to do is just say OK, and then I keep going. So very simple, something that I would encourage you guys to take a look at. I got 5 minutes, so let me kind of run through faster. The other set of services that can help you manage at scale, and again, when I mean scale, I'm literally meaning hundreds, if not thousands, of virtual machines, is a service called Azure Automation that works with Azure Virtual Machines, or the Azure Infrastructure Service, where if you have a bunch of scripts that you always want to run on a set of virtual machines, we take the responsibility of orchestrating these workflows. Remember I said, if you're running the same script 100 times and if it failed like the 99th time, what do you do? So this is, think of it as the policy manager, that you can actually create and compose policies to say, this script I want it to run on hundreds of virtual machines, and if it fails here, do this. If it fails here, do that. So you can actually compose a really rich policy engine on top of PowerShell scripting. And it's a hosted service, so you don't have to worry about where these scripts are living. All you have to do is point to GitHub or point to your Azure storage where the scripts are, and we'll take care of plumbing into your virtual machine in a secure way and running these virtual machines. And we'll obviously kind of show you the results as and when the scripts are running. Operational insights, if you are familiar with System Center, so System Center Operations Manager, think of this as System Center Operation Manager in cloud, right? So it's a hosted service that allows you to take advantage of basically infrastructure monitoring. What's happening in my virtual machine? How much CPU percentage is left? How much memory is left? How much disk space is left? All that information is richly gathered and shown in a portal in an actionable way, so you can actually manage your workloads, hundreds of them at a time, as opposed to one virtual machine at a time. I talked about virtual machine extensions. This is a huge category of extensions. We have PowerShell desired state configuration, if you're familiar with that. What it allows you to do is customize your virtual machine in a declarative way. So you can actually write some code to say, whenever my virtual machine boots up, I want it to look like X, right? It should have SQL installed, it should have Oracle installed, it should have XYZ installed, these ports open. So you can write that as a code, and then this extension will go and execute and make sure your virtual machine complies to that desired state. We also have Octopus. These are some of our third-party DevOps solutions. Octopus is a .NET-based multi-VM deployment tool. Again, you go through the portal that I showed, and you add a few parameters, and you're good to go. We support Visual Studio Release Manager if you're used to using Release Manager as your RM tool. We support Chef and Puppet, a very popular configuration management software in many enterprises. In general, in DevOps, we want to make sure it's as easy as possible for you to just get going. All right, migration disaster recovery. Remember I told you we are getting into this notion where I can take advantage of cloud as my disaster recovery site. We have a fully managed hosted service in Azure where you can point to virtual machines running on-prem and say, create a bunch of virtual machines in Azure, pick your region, and say, set up a disaster recovery relationship. And we will orchestrate based on certain policies or triggers when a region goes down, so you can automatically fail over your workload, redirect your IP addresses to the virtual machines that are running in the cloud, right? So fully automated, again, fully hosted in Azure. It's regardless of which Azure region you're running in, especially when we have the data center capacity in Azure, you should be able to just use it out of the cloud. Know your scale boundaries. I always suggest that whenever you're thinking about scale, especially when you talk about hundreds of scales, even though public cloud is almost infinite, there are still boundaries, right? These are boundaries you should think about when you're composing applications, especially new applications that are spread across multiple regions, right? We have this notion of an Azure subscription, actually an Azure account, which can have multiple subscriptions. So understanding the hierarchy of how Azure concepts and Azure role-based access controls are set up is a really good idea. So we talked about high availability, manage at scale. How do you do write once and run anywhere? How do you achieve this promise? So Azure is working on this new set of APIs to manage Azure resources, including virtual machines, called Azure Resource Manager. I would highly, highly recommend you to take a look at it. This is a new API, still in preview. What it allows you to do in simplicity is the ability to create templates. A template is a JSON file that allows you to describe what a group of virtual machines looks like. Right? If you guys are familiar with AWS, they have something called CloudFormation. Or if you're using OpenStack, they have something called Heat, you know, which is essentially a template language. So this is the Azure template language that allows you to create groups of virtual machines. You describe that in the JSON document, you know, what you want each virtual machine to look like, what extensions you want installed, what configurations, what ports, the whole nine yards. And then you give it to Azure, you know, give it to a REST endpoint, and then we will execute it for you. If something happens that is not desired in the middle of the deployment, we will roll back for you. We'll make sure it is idempotent, right? So with that context, I wanted to kind of quickly touch on containers. There's a lot of buzz around containers and Docker. And the primary reason for that is this promise of portability. It's the promise of write once, run anywhere, right? And it's catering to both the developers as well as operations for the first time, because it allows you to create applications, describe them in a way that you will get the production realism. And what I call as production realism is where if it ran in my QA or a dev environment, I need to have guarantees that it will run the same way in production, right? And we've had a hard time with this type of requirement with virtual machines, because virtual machines come in so many different shapes and forms. Every cloud provider has their own family of virtual machines, right? So when you move them, suddenly, you know, there are certain performance guarantees that are gone away. Containers, you know, provide you that level of isolation and abstraction at the highest level, so you can create multi-tier applications that can kind of move between different cloud providers. So, you know, the main difference between containers and virtual machines are that, you know, containers are much more denser than virtual machines, so you can have hundreds of containers running in a single virtual machine, and thereby starting an application running in a container is much, much faster. It's almost as fast as starting a process in Windows or Linux. And they are portable. I talked about the production realism. Much more portable than, you know, virtual machines. And then the cost, because you're able to kind of pack a lot of containers in this virtual machine, you know, you're essentially getting the benefits of consolidation. So Docker, today we support Docker on Azure. Today the support is on Linux. You know, we publicly announced that we are working on Windows Server containers in our next release of Windows Server. And when that becomes available, Docker will be the API for managing Linux containers or Windows Server containers, right? So what we've done today is we have in our marketplace an image with Docker pre-configured. So you go just like in the portal that I showed you, you create that virtual machine with Docker install, and then you just start creating containers, right? Complex multi-container applications. So the way this all fits together, you know, again, talking about, you know, opening up your imagination, you focus more on the first layer, your application and service. This is where you are able to kind of differentiate, you are able to kind of make your company more successful. They happen to run on a bunch of containers, which happens to run on a bunch of virtual machines. So the idea behind this is you focus on your application. When your application needs to expand and grow, you'll end up creating a layer that creating lots of containers, and that lots of containers end up creating lots of virtual machines. So you literally don't have to worry about the bottom two layers, right? As Dave talked about, a lot of the commoditization that will happen at the virtual machine layer and the container layer. The lot of differentiation for you and for Azure is how you are managing these groups of containers. And imagine hundreds of thousands of these containers, right? We have actually examples where customers are asking that type of scale. In some cases, they are running in production with that many number of containers. So again, you know, just to kind of spark your imagination there. Marketplace, we have a whole bunch of customers in our marketplace. You know, these are some of the top ones that, you know, we have currently 3,000 solutions in our marketplace. Variety of applications, you know, Java applications, .NET applications, the entire stack applications. You can have a LAMP stack, a mean stack. I mean, whatever is your choice, it's our goal to kind of go out and get that applications in the marketplace. If you don't have it today, give us feedback. We are willing to work with any partner to make sure that their solutions are in the marketplace. To just wrap up, so we talked about the application patterns in the beginning of the talk, right? So if you think about all the features that I talked about, for dev test, there is the A-Series virtual machine, there is the VM capture feature, the extensions with the DevOps capability, and the MSDN credits. For lift and shift applications, we talked about the D-Series and the G-Series, so your applications can be much faster. The premium storage, I showed you a couple of demos, the networking and the security features. When you move into the next territory where, you know, you're truly differentiating with cloud, with hybrid, we talked about the site recovery where you can set up, you know, a DR relationship. many enterprises weren't able to afford, you know, such DR capabilities before, can actually take advantage of the price economics of cloud to set these up very easily. And last but not the least, the hyperscale applications, you know, do management at really large scale. You know, think about using containers and then just deploying large, big compute and big data application support that we already have in marketplace. So many ways to get started. You know, you can start with a virtual machine. You can bring your own virtual machine image if you already configured. You can start from our gallery. You can start with a template where, you know, we've already composed and made it turnkey for you to kind of get started on a NoSQL application using Cassandra or MongoDB. So we have several of those starter templates available for you to get started within minutes. You can use extensions if you want to write your own extension and do some custom stuff on a virtual machine or a group of virtual machines, you could do that. Or you could do the container stuff. So many ways in the spectrum. There is no one way that is right for all of you. Pick the right solution that works for you. But in general, you know, you have the freedom of choice. If you do want to go to a platform as a service model where, you know, there's too much choice is bothering you, you could do that as well, right? So we want to make sure that we provide the entire spectrum from Azure point of view. So the last slide really is, you know, I wanted to kind of end with the note that, you know, what Azure does for your application, hopefully, is to make it cheaper, faster, and smarter. And we have all the tools that are available to kind of make that happen. Here are some references. I have a session tomorrow, same time. Maybe it starts at the right time, at 11 o'clock. It's focused on Linux and open source, you know, how we support Linux and open source on Azure. Definitely encourage you to kind of attend that. And then we have a case study. In fact, I'll quickly show you of a number of customers, especially in India, that are taking advantage of, you know, our public cloud offering. And as soon as we have... I don't seem to have the customer case studies. But anyway, so if I go back here, you can use that link. There are several you know, customer case studies there. You know, these are, as Dave mentioned, these are references that the customers themselves have given us permission to share. A lot more information on what their architecture is, what technologies they're using in Azure. You can also you know, look at the premium storage documentation and the virtual machine documentation. And there is a Azure Vidya Peeth series that's going on. You know, I have the link here, and I encourage you to kind of take advantage of that. And then your feedback is important. So thanks for being here, and I'll be hanging around, you know, if you have any questions. Thank you.